Welcome. Today I am here with Allison Cooper, and I'm so glad that Allison has joined us today. She is an LPC, she's a good friend of mine, and she has devoted her career to treating anxiety disorders. And today we're going to talk about all things anxiety. I know it's a topic that touches so many of us and our children in so many ways. And so I'm thrilled, Allison, that you are here today.
Thank you, Millie. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Why don't we start? You just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do as a therapist.
Okay. A little bit about me personally is I'm a mom of now two teenagers, a 13 and 15-year-old, that I love being a mom to. I've been married for almost 18 years this year. And you know, that's the family side of things. But as a therapist, I definitely enjoy focusing on anxiety disorders and OCD. One of the main reasons is I see that it affects so many people so intensely, but that also that it's highly treatable. And I love that part of working with anxiety disorders.
That's great. Let's just jump in today, and I would like you to tell us how you see people struggling with anxiety. We've had quite a year, with the pandemic, and I want you to tell us what you see your clients struggling with.
You know, I've always seen people deal with anxiety, but I feel like, you know, over the past year or a little over a year, that it's probably increased in intensity. Is what I've seen in my office. People dealing with anxiety are going to see things like, in my office, I'm seeing a lot of excessive worry, increase in intense fears. Some people are experiencing a lot of physical tension, heightened physical symptoms of anxiety. A lot of people deal with difficulty with decision-making, trouble concentrating. And one of the biggest things I tend to see is avoidance of things that they would otherwise be able to do. I think if you take, you know, the situation we've had this past year, it's taken away a lot of people's typical opportunities for coping, and we've increased stress on top of that, and that's why we're seeing such an increase in the intensity of anxiety recently. And this is from all ages, from kids up. Everybody experiences it differently, but I'm seeing it across the board of all ages.
Yes, so true. Anxiety can be debilitating.
Yes.
I think some people don't maybe understand that. Mm-hmm. And if you live with a family member that struggles with anxiety, mm-hmm. it can be very frustrating.
Yes.
You might not understand it. You don't know why they can't just get over it and be mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. And it causes you to avoid. It causes you to have great fear mm-hmm. And dread. There's a lot mm-hmm. of physical symptoms that come with anxiety, mm-hmm. and it can really be debilitating.
Yes, it certainly can. And I think for somebody on the opposite side, whether it's a spouse or a parent, I think one of the things that's difficult to understand about anxiety is that person's physical experience is very intense, but looking from the outside, it may look like something that someone shouldn't worry about or shouldn't be afraid of, and that can be a big disconnect. So you get a lot of the, you know, well-intentioned people saying, well, don't worry about that, or why would you be afraid of that? And I think it's important to try to understand that person's experience is very real to them, even though it seems disproportionate to somebody on the outside.
That's a great point. I think anxiety for the person that's struggling with it is huge.
Yes.
But I also think the family members that surround them need education as well.
Absolutely.
So they can help, whether it's your child or your husband or your
yes.
wife, you can be a support to that person.
Yes, absolutely. And I think an understanding of it and empathy for it, because you yourself may not deal with anxiety, but empathizing with somebody that's having a very real experience, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense to somebody on the outside.
I think that's a very good point, is that it doesn't always make a lot of sense mm-hmm. on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So what are some challenges over the last year that you have seen connected with anxiety?
I think one of the biggest challenges I've seen this year, and it's always a challenge for somebody that deals with anxiety, but I think this year it's been a little bit of heightened, is people's ability to deal with uncertainty. I think over the past year, our nation as a whole has had to deal with pretty unprecedented amount of stress and issues with health and finances, education, government, a variety of other things that we've had to really kind of deal with uncertainty on. And that's been complicated by all those things that I just mentioned. So, you know, I work with a lot of people, you know, just with anxiety in general, being comfortable and dealing with uncertainty. I think this past year has definitely made that more intense and more present. I also think that a lot of the ways that people might have dealt with their anxiety in the past have been changed just due to circumstances. People that might have gone to a gym or, you know, spent time with friends or traveled or, you know, been able to work outside the home. I think all of those things have changed maybe how we manage anxiety, and it's been very limiting. I also think something I've seen a lot in my practice is that there's been a huge impact that isolation has made on individual stress levels and feelings of just security. And I think that you know, it hits different people in different ways, but there's been, you know, there was a long period of time where isolation was definitely a stressor. So I've seen all of these things kind of play into how people have experienced anxiety the past year.
It does seem like the last year has really been the perfect storm.
Yes.
For anxiety.
Yes.
We've seen people who've never struggled in the past.
Correct.
Present with pretty significant anxiety over the last year.
Yes, absolutely. I would say that's true.
And that's a really hard thing if you're a person who really has not ever had to deal with anxiety, and now you maybe mm-hmm. are having panic attacks, or you're
yes.
having, you know, really specific fears about things, or you're
yes.
just not able to deal with the uncertainty of life.
Absolutely. I think, you know, people that typically deal with anxiety, this may seem more commonplace. They kind of know the drill of how to deal with it, but certainly, you know, I've spoken with a lot of people that anxiety is completely new for them just because of the drastic kind of shift and change in maybe their lifestyle over the past year.
I talked with a sweet lady the other day, and the way she had coped with her anxiety in the past had been that she had good friends that they met for lunch
mm-hmm.
Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was her lifeline. Like, she
yes.
really got so much out of just that group. Every week she looked forward to it, and they supported and cared for each other. And when the pandemic hit, they stopped meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And something as small as that really has taken a huge toll on her, that she does not have that support system, that outlet
mm-hmm.
anymore. And she has become much more anxious.
Yes, I've seen that play out time and time again. And a lot of what I've worked with clients on this year is being more intentional about how they manage their stress and being more creative in different ways that they can do that. Obviously, things are more open now, and we have access to things that we probably enjoyed before. But, you know, there was a long period of time where people got out of the habit of doing things that were good for them. So I think it's definitely, we've had to be more intentional and purposeful about how we manage our stress.
Right. Tell us what anxiety is. Do you have a definition that you use?
I think the best way I describe anxiety is it's typically just kind of a feeling of dread or impending doom, just like something terrible is going to happen. You're not sure what, but you know it's around the corner is the best way I would describe it. You know, it's an emotion generally characterized by tension or worried thoughts. But also for many people includes a lot of changes physically, just in their heart rate or their, you know, physical sensations. So it can definitely be a combination of the two
mm-hmm.
For people. You know, it can present in a number of different ways. Some people experience, like I said, excessive worry or intense fears. And some it's physical. They have trouble with shakiness, dizziness, increased heart rate, sweating, muscle tension, just kind of the feeling of hypervigilance, just looking out for something terrible. They're not sure what they're looking for, but they just know that there's something around the corner. You know, it's a complicated emotional response. It's similar to fear, but it's different, and that fear is generally associated with the present and identifiable threat that you can see and acknowledge, while anxiety occurs in the absence of immediate threat. But it's the feeling of it. The way I often describe it in my office is, you know, if we're sitting in a room and a tiger would walk in that room, we would have all kinds of physical responses to that threat. The problem with anxiety is it's kind of we have all those responses without an actual tiger in the room. And that's hard for people to kind of understand is, you know, why is my body sending all these danger signals when there isn't danger? And I think that's one of the first keys to understanding what anxiety is.
Just because something feels dangerous doesn't mean it is dangerous.
Correct. I use the phrase in my office all the time that fear does not equal danger, is that I think people assume if my heart's going, you know, 100 miles a minute and I'm sweating and trembling, something terrible must be on the way. But being able to understand, okay, that's actually just a process in my brain. It's a faulty alarm, and I don't need to respond to it as though I would respond to an actual threat. And that can be kind of one of the first steps in understanding how to engage with your brain in that moment.
So our brain doesn't do a great job at times at determining what is a threat and what's not a threat. It just
right.
decides to go on high alert
yes.
in case there's a threat.
Yes. You know, our brains are designed to do that to save our lives when there, you know, is an immediate danger. But with anxiety, it's a little bit of an itchy trigger finger, and it can kind of turn on when we're sitting in school or we're at work or even at home. And that can be very confusing to people that experience it.
And it can come out of the blue.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
It can. There's, you know, there's two pathways to anxiety of how it's created. And I always like to explain this to people because I get a lot of clients that tend to be frustrated not knowing why they feel anxious. I hear a lot, I just woke up this morning, my heart was racing, I'm not thinking about anything worrisome, so I try to explain how it's created. The two pathways that are in general for anxiety is an amygdala-based pathway, and that's the type of anxiety that comes on suddenly. It's very physical. It's one of those where just out of the blue you feel kind of panicked and afraid. The cortex-based is when we're actively kind of worried, thinking worst-case scenario, worrisome thoughts, and then that kind of activates that amygdala part of our brain and gets us to feeling anxious. So you can have both pathways, a combination of both, but I like to explain how that works for people because I think if you know where it's coming from or how it was created, sometimes you feel like you can understand it a little bit better.
I think understanding is one of the keys to managing anxiety. When I know
yes.
what is happening in my brain,
yes.
then I can make better choices.
Yes. I think once we understand our brain and what is happening, we learn how to respond in a way that can deactivate a response like that. Whereas we typically respond in ways that kind of keep us activated and heightened. I always start with good kind of psychoeducation on how anxiety is created and what's happening in our brain so people feel like they have some powerfulness over the process and some ability to respond better.
So we don't feel so out of control.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things that is very hard is controlling our thoughts,
mm-hmm.
managing our thoughts,
mm-hmm.
taking our thoughts captive,
mm-hmm.
like Scripture says.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about how our thoughts affect the way we feel. We usually tend
mm-hmm.
to feel what we think.
Yes.
Is that true with anxiety?
Yes. And I use the term cognitive behavior therapy. That's kind of a primary treatment or therapy style that we use for anxiety. And in cognitive behavior therapy, we look at just that, like how our thoughts affect how we think and how we feel. Anxiety is created when we overestimate a risk or a danger or a negative outcome and underestimate our ability to deal with it. So focusing on challenging those thoughts can be a huge step forward in better understanding, having a better understanding and relationship with anxiety. You know, I talk with people a lot about, it sounds strange, but their relationship with anxiety is important. That if it's something I feel like I need to control or avoid or make stop right away, that tends to be a very unhealthy, negative relationship with anxiety. So even using the words manage, tolerate, lean into makes it seem like something a lot less threatening. and a lot more manageable. So I even, you know, kind of go down to that part where the way we talk about anxiety, the words change because it matters how we think about it and how we talk about it.
I also help clients see that anxiety is not their identity.
Yes.
That this is something that you struggle with. I like the way you said relationship. Like you, mm-hmm. whether you want to have a relationship or not, you have mm-hmm. a relationship with anxiety.
Yes.
And that's important that we, you know, we can't outrun it. We
right.
can't make it stop.
Right.
But you can definitely learn to manage it. And it's something that is not you. It's not who you are.
Right.
It's something that you are managing.
Right. And I use the word, you know, we can do things despite or with or alongside our anxiety. It's not something that has to stop for me to be able to move forward. And I think that's also a very kind of freeing idea, is that people think, well, I'll do these things when I'm not anxious about it. And I work with clients on, no, we're going to do these things while we're anxious and let them kind of understand they can have a little bit more freedom that way.
That's great. What are some techniques that make us feel calm? So that's something that I think all of us are looking for, ways to just relax, to learn to calm ourselves down. What are some ways that really help us anxiety-wise learn to calm down?
I think this kind of goes back to what we were talking about a moment ago, but I think helping people understand what's going on in their brain, it's amazing to me how often when we educate people on that, that can kind of instantly make them feel more calm and relaxed because they understand what's happening, that it's just an emotion, it's not dangerous, that it passes. You know, anxiety always passes at some point. So just for them to understand that, I think kind of gives them a level of calmness. I also think that people tend to respond to anxiety with avoidance or with the goal of getting rid of their anxiety as quickly as possible. So I encourage, you know, number one, you know, I always talk through, you know, what are things that you're avoiding you need to be able to face, but also the idea that you need to get rid of anxiety quickly can kind of create, I call it secondary anxiety. It's, I'm anxious and I can't get rid of this anxious feeling. So helping them to understand that they don't have to make it better right away. But there are some basic things people can do. I think we underestimate just things like deep breathing exercises. It's one of the quickest ways that we can communicate to our brain that we're safe. Mm. I think a lot of people, when they're anxious or in fear, tend to either breathe too shallow and quick or gulp air and think they're deep breathing, but they're not. And those are both things that kind of communicate to the brain that you are actually in trouble. So anything that you can do to communicate to your brain that things are actually okay, and deep breathing is one of the best ways to do that. It communicates pretty quickly to the amygdala. Now, it doesn't work like a switch, but it can start to kind of let that nervous system know that it can calm down. So I really like deep breathing as a calming technique. If people can do it correctly, it can be very helpful. I also talk a lot about exercise. Exercise has a very positive impact on anxiety. I think it can have some immediate impact, but also long-term. So people that exercise in the morning, even 20 minutes, kind of have a calming effect throughout the day. It's not just during the workout or directly after. So that's kind of another way, you know, I talk through how can we incorporate that in our routine to kind of help us manage that emotion throughout the day.
That's great. What about anxious thoughts?
So we can challenge the anxious thoughts. And I think, you know, there's a word called catastrophizing. It's kind of a fancy word for just worst case scenario, is working with people on, you know, that overestimation of risk that I talked about earlier, is, you know, how probable is this? Is there another way this could turn out? Helping them to be more realistic in their thoughts rather than that worst case scenario. And also that second half of that equation is, how am I going to deal with this? Reminding them of resources that they have, either through a support system or just kind of their intrinsic resources that they can rely on, is a way that help people kind of manage when their thoughts get away from them.
Sometimes we don't even know that we're catastrophizing.
Yes.
We don't realize that we are going to worst case scenarios again and again and again.
Yes. You know, that's why I always show that. I kind of do it as a math equation, but it's, you know, that overestimation of risk, underestimation of my resources. I show that to people all the time so they can kind of keep in their mind, as I'm anticipating this event, is this what I'm doing? Is this the filter I'm using? So they can start to challenge that a little bit.
That's great. So you do a lot of work with generalized anxiety disorder.
Yes.
Which usually is characterized by a lot of worry.
Yes.
Another form, and you do a lot of work with anxiety disorders, mm-hmm. but another anxiety disorder that you specialize in is OCD.
Mm-hmm.
And there are not many people in our East Texas area that have the kind of training in OCD that you have. Mm-hmm. So I would love for you to talk about what is it, and I know we can't get into all of that today,
sure.
but if there are some people listening, they might resonate with some of the things mm-hmm. that you're going to say about OCD.
Okay. You know, I'm happy to describe it. I just always say that you may notice, hey, I have some of these OCD tendencies. That doesn't mean that it's to the point of diagnosis. So I let people know you may notice you do a few of these things, but it doesn't mean, you know, necessarily that you're diagnosed with OCD. But in general, OCD occurs when a person gets caught in a cycle of obsessions and compulsions. So obsessions are basically unwanted, intrusive thoughts, images, or urges that trigger very intense anxiety or feelings of distress. And following that are compulsions, and those are usually behaviors an individual would engage in to attempt to get rid of the obsessions and or to decrease your distress. So in summary, obsessions kind of increase anxiety, and the compulsions are meant to decrease anxiety. And, you know, there's a variety of different ways OCD can present and different subtypes.
So one thing that I see in my office, and I don't do the kind of work with OCD that you do, but I see that people are engaging in checking behaviors.
Sure.
Hand washing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two that I see probably the most.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the others maybe that you see on a regular basis?
You know, I definitely see, you know, your contamination fears, symmetry, needing things a certain way. You know, we talk a lot about the just right, people that need things to be just right, whether that be, you know, in their home or at work, needing things to be precise. You know, there's a variety of other ways that it can play out, but they generally have that same cycle of just an obsessive thought, needing it to go away or neutralize it through a behavior or a ritual.
If I'm someone who is struggling with some of the things that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
what do I do?
You know, I think it's always a good idea, you know, if you're experiencing anxiety or OCD symptoms to the point where it's getting in the way of you being able to do things that you would normally be able to do or like to do, you know, it'd probably be a good time to see a therapist trained in those areas just to get a sense of, you know, are you responding well? Are there other tools that you could add to kind of what you're already doing to help manage it better?
OCD tends to be complicated.
Yeah, it can be, yes.
It can be, and it's really nice to be able to talk through this with a professional who is trained in OCD. This is a very specialized area.
It is, and I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, once people come to see me that, you know, ask a certain question and they realize they do a lot more of those behaviors than they realize, because a lot of people will think, well, this is just how I do this task.
Or this is normal.
This is very normal, and, you know, if it's not causing a lot of distress, you know, maybe that's okay. But coming in to talk to me, I kind of know the questions to ask just to see how pervasive it is or how much it is getting in the way of their normal daily life.
Yeah, that's good. And your family members might think it's more distressing than
yes.
perhaps you see it as.
Yes, and a lot of them will accommodate it because they feel like, well, this is just what the family needs to do to accommodate this person. This is how they need things done. And you know, it can make that a cycle that's unhealthy for everybody. So we try to look at the system and how it's also enabling some of the behaviors.
That's great. I would love to ask you about intrusive thoughts. That's something that every time I have an opportunity to speak on anxiety, I mm-hmm. try to talk about intrusive thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly do a section on intrusive thoughts when I'm talking about postpartum depression,
mm-hmm.
postpartum anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
What are intrusive thoughts, and how should we learn to manage those?
So I find myself talking about this a lot in my office. So intrusive thoughts in general is, you know, a thought or an image or an urge that kind of comes in your mind unwanted that's very distressing or disturbing. It's usually taboo or, you know, something counter to what you would typically believe in or how you would typically behave. And it can cause people a lot of distress. So most people have intrusive thoughts at some point in their life. Their brain is just very adept at kind of filtering it out and putting it in kind of the garbage can as quickly as possible.
And that's what we talk about, anxiety. People with anxiety have a sticky brain.
Yes. I call intrusive thoughts sticky thoughts. It works for kids and adults,
right.
Just that idea. And people that have anxiety or OCD, their ability to filter out thoughts, it's compromised. So what may come in and out of somebody else's brain would kind of get stuck in somebody's brain that has OCD or anxiety, and then they try to fight that thought, or they try to fix it with a compulsion or ritual. So, you know, there can be a lot of shame in having intrusive thoughts because the topic is usually pretty taboo or distressing. So we try to take the shame out of it and help them understand how to respond better to it, which is more noticing and kind of letting go than it is fighting or trying to fix it. I really enjoy working with people on those because they can get a lot of relief pretty quickly once they understand that what these are and what they aren't and how to move through them more easily.
That this thought can't hurt me. It's
correct.
Just a thought.
Or doesn't define me or who I am, right. Or my character or what I might do.
Okay, just mm-hmm. a thought.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's very freeing.
Yes,
it is. There's a lot of freedom in that.
Yes.
What about panic? I don't think we touched on panic.
So, you know, people have a hard time defining what is panic or what is a panic attack. And I think, you know, sometimes it depends on the person, but it's more, if you think about anxiety, it's just the intensity of it. People can develop panic disorder or panic attacks. It's usually the experience when people say, I had a hard time catching my breath. I felt like there was a weight on my chest. And a lot of times I'll go through the anatomy of how a panic attack is created, just so people understand. It kind of started with the trigger. I had a slight increase in my physical symptoms. Then I started to focus on those symptoms. Then I started to kind of catastrophize them, to use that word again, and then panic. So I help people kind of understand how that process plays out. Panic attacks feel dangerous and bad, but they're not. They're just very uncomfortable. They are temporary. A lot of people feel that it will last forever or, you know, that it's really dangerous, but it's, you know, ultimately just a very uncomfortable experience. And we talk a lot about not having a lot of fear of, when's my next panic attack?
People are anxious about another panic attack.
Yes.
I'm panicked about panicking.
Yes, especially if it's your first panic attack. I always encourage clients, well, don't be afraid of the next, because, you know, that's just going to create more anxiety and make it more likely for you to have one. But I like to educate people on how to respond to a panic attack, but more importantly, how to intervene earlier so, you know, potentially it wouldn't get to that level of intensity.
That's great. Does anxiety ever just go away?
The short answer is probably not, because everybody experiences anxiety. It's a very normal experience, and it's not always dysfunctional. I also talk a lot about that in my office, that we look at anxiety as an all bad entity or emotion, and it's not. A lot of times anxiety can motivate us. So if I'm anxious about a test at school, so that means I'm going to go to class and study and do my homework, that's a good motivator. If I didn't have any anxiety about my test, maybe I wouldn't work as hard to prepare. So I think that there's a time and place for anxiety, and there's a lot of times anxiety is appropriate. So I, you know, always set the expectation is that our goal is never to eliminate anxiety entirely. So yeah, I think, you know, we should always have some amount or level of anxiety just in daily life. Anxiety at its best can help us stay alert and focused. At its worst, it can wreak complete havoc and paralyze us from being able to move forward. So I like to help clients continue to work on a better relationship with that. And rather than attempting to avoid or get rid of it, learn how to lean into it and how to tolerate those feelings of discomfort and uncertainty and understand, you know, how their anxiety works and how they can respond to it better.
When is it appropriate to seek counseling for anxiety?
You know, I think that if you find that your world is getting smaller, meaning I'm avoiding more things I'm able to do is kind of getting, that circle is getting smaller and smaller, or it's starting to affect relationships, it's starting to affect my enjoyment and things that I would normally enjoy, you know, I would say it's definitely a good time to go in and see a therapist that's trained in anxiety.
That's great. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I loved our time together, and I think so many people are going to resonate with the things that we talked about. If you are out there today and you're listening and you think that some of these things that we've talked about really apply to you or to a family member, please let us know. At Solace Counseling and Anxiety Center, we'd love to make an appointment for you and sit down and talk. Everyone at our office treats anxiety in some different ways, and we'd love for you to come and talk to us about that. We also want to thank Grace Community Church for partnering with us to make this podcast available. I'm Millie Tanner and Allison Cooper, and thank you so much for joining us.